Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable started of hope, which we hope to achieve this year. We achieved 2.96, so there's a gradual improvement in the quality of governance in the department. But we stay to fraud and corruption. The legislature requires that we initiate all investigations, reported to the department in 30 days, and we've done so in all cases. Our APP also requires us to engage in two major interventions per annum to prevent fraud. The department in the year under review, we focus on the missing environment and the pristine environment where we develop the fraud loss management strategy in order to prevent fraud and corruption before it happens through the means of internal controls. Moving on to slide 12, with respect to the irregular expenditure baseline, we underperformed here. Only 11% of the baseline was reduced. Lack of supporting documentation on the older transactions prevented the level of performance expected in this area. With respect to compliant invoices settled within 30 days, 95% were settled within 30 days, and we are working on improving the time and turnaround time with respect to certification of invoices by line managers, so we reach our target in the year ahead of us. 26% against the 70% target of first were awarded within 46 days of agenda. This target was not achieved. The continuous change in requirements by clients affected the timeline, and the department is working towards closing these gaps, towards improving the level of performance. With respect to quotation, 67% has an effort target of 88%, which is 1,729 out of 2,447 quotations were awarded within 30 days, and then 99%, our empowerment targets, the last two targets, 99% of our procurement spend for bid awarded were awarded to residential groups, and 98% of the bids, the number of bids awarded to designated groups in terms of the group BSA. So we've achieved almost 100% award to designated groups. Moving on to the next slide, and this one talks to positions followed within 6 months of the DC requirement. All positions are followed within 6 months of NDIS. That is 100%. We achieved 73%, and this is because of the moratorium on the filling of vacant positions in the department, and this has delayed the filling of positions within the 6 months required time. With respect to IT chairperson and members of the committee, the IT targets don't show an encouraging sign. The level of performance has not been the target of 5 new modules implemented, and all of them are still under development. So while work has taken place in this regard, the target of 5 new modules has not been implemented, although 3 out of 4 modules for enhancement were in fact achieved in the year under review. With respect to feasibility studies, we conducted a feasibility study on the ERP system so that we can roll this out to the public works sector to our 9 provinces that took place in the year under review. It was successfully consummated, and then moving on to fraud, corruption, and import matters, 100% of all reported cases of fraud and corruption were subject to disciplinary process in the department, and all default judgments prevented. Moving on to Program 2. The Program 2 is comprised, as I mentioned, of intergovernmental relations of coordination on the one hand and professional services on the other. The first target refers to the performance review report. We targeted 2 performance review reports presented during the year under review. We achieved only 1. And as a consequence of MINMAC, the MINMAC structure directing the department to focus on the program of action and to focus all energies on the program of action. So our emphasis there was redirected to the program of action. With respect to agreement signed for joint service delivery with other partners in the sector, we signed 13 or 15. These are very protracted processes with respect to IGR partners, so we've managed to achieve 13 out of 15 under difficult conditions to reach consent. And then we also conducted a survey review of our IGR structures during the year. And now, Chairperson and members of the committee, moving on to our program with respect to professional services, we've achieved 1,202 out of a target of 1,100 with respect to beneficiaries participating in the DPW skills program, and also reviewed 3 provinces and a target of 3 provinces for the state capacity building aligned to the skills pipeline program. We have a skills pipeline program, and in the year, 1/3 of our target of 9 provinces over a 3-year period was in fact reviewed for alignment to the skills pipeline program, so that has been a successful outcome. document approved. We can't achieve this. This is still under discussion, and our Public Works Academy is obviously being deferred to the year ahead. Moving on to Program 3, Extended Public Works Program. With respect to the target of 1,455,840, 997,286 work opportunities were created. There were problems with capturing. They were capturing delayed by public bodies. By public bodies. We've also noted non-reporting and under-reporting by public bodies, where they only report work opportunities created for the intent of trust, and that will result in a significant level of underperformance with respect to the EPWP target that emanates from the systems deployed by the public bodies. And then with respect to the subcategory of the performance, we have a target 5% for women, 45% for youth, and 2% for people with disabilities. In this particular area, we have exceeded the target of women with 68%. However, youth is coming at 43%, and 1% for persons with disabilities. We underachieved those particular areas. And then 10% and 11%, as I mentioned, the underreporting by public bodies is a significant reason for underperformance of this program. And in order to reverse this, conduct data quality assessments and support public bodies to ensure the report, while the report is credible, and if they are under review, they produce two data quality assessments in this particular regard, at the back of data quality assessment reports and work conducted among the heads of the public bodies. They also support a non-profit organization to focus on labor-intensive job creation and also to report credibly on the system. We have a target of 330, they exceeded it by supporting 362 bodies, and they also provided technical support to 322 public bodies as opposed to a target of 290 public bodies. So the initiative in this particular regard has been significant in order to close the gap between what opportunities created its potential on the one hand and what is reported on the system. EPWP, however, on an annual basis has developed and been passed a policy document, which I'm not sure my colleagues will explain, and this year the framework was not approved. On slide number 16, this is our property and construction industry policy research for our, in simple terms, our policy branch, and as chairman and members of the committee, the policy branch had started to at least submit to the minister a draft public works program. Also a draft amendment to a CIDD bill and CDD amendment bill. These targets were not achieved. In fact, what has transpired is that the branch seems to be a few years in arrears in terms of meeting its targets. And what has been transpired is that the current year they produced a review report. And this review report will be used as a basis to perhaps develop a white paper going forward, and a decision will then be taken about the way forward. Required for effective legislation or so. So the targets have changed somewhat here. And with respect to the CIDD, they developed a draft amendment and CPE, there's engagement taking place with the World Environment Protection Council. The feeling was that these councils have their priorities where they also protect their professionals. And there's a need for a better level of consultation. So during the year, there is a consultation process took place for the World Environment. So the deviations here are also a change in priorities and department. Moving finally to our prestige program, the delivery of the prestige function takes place through the property arm. That's where the physical work takes place. The customer relationship management and the development of norms and standards takes place in the main code under this particular program. And during the year under review, one or two policies targeted for development have been approved. And the chair, members of the government, as you mentioned before, the policies and norms and standards is a critical part of what prestige does. So prestige clients know what to expect, and they also know in terms of what not to expect in the limits of the provision of prestige products and services. So it's very important to ensure the credibility of the program. During the year, they had a target of two, they only achieved one. And what has transpired is that we refocused the prestige program to develop a funeral policy so that even the fact that safety net required. it's rather too fancy and administered, that it should be long-term therapy plan, so that the expectation which we work in our parameters would be which we must function. And then with respect to movable assets provided to the client, the target is 80%, however only 30% of movable assets were provided within 60 days after approval by the same client. This has moved up. The target is now 79% after the audit has taken place. And this has shown an improvement. And what Prestige has done, they started to use self-contracts. So they don't run around looking for a contract. They understand they have a problem. They have a self-contract in place. And they're creating a lot of efficiency in this particular environment. With respect to safe events, you know, they see that even at the target, we have safe place, safe events, movement, the possible movement of furniture. Infrastructure, and then with respect to infrastructure workers, what I want to explain, Chairperson, that infrastructure workers is essentially the client of the planning instrument to which the client needs within a particular area. And we've started once for the year that we will essentially develop five infrastructure workers within the Prestige portfolio. And this brings a greater level of understanding of the need of Prestige clients. So this is an internal training document. So when you advance, we know how to plan for the year again. Moving on to slide number 18, these are the important outcomes for performance information. As you see, over the years, the Chairperson has demonstrated that there has been an improvement. There was a replacement between the WP in 2016-17 and then a qualification, and this has remained unchanged. It's a very strong point for the department. What we would see is that the reason that sufficient evidence is not provided in some areas for job creation, and also evidence does not always agree with what is reported. And I think this is a sore point because the Department of Public Works is not creating all the work opportunities. We are reporting the 1 million jobs we report created by every public body, as well as the non-profit organizations, by every municipality. And if they have the evidence that they are reporting, we then know the finding. And in the new training cycle, we're seeking to address this by ensuring that we are measured and we are audited on what we do as departments, rather than the program as a whole. So this is something we're dealing with very often, but the audit qualification links to under-reporting, mainly by public audits. Then moving on to the property and construction, it's unqualified, and I mentioned in a few slides earlier that we haven't reached our target, but it's unqualified. And this is the interesting thing about performance information. It was reported credibly, so therefore we are unqualified, even though, as I mentioned, we have not achieved our target in that area. With respect to Prestige, last year we had a disclaimer in the Prestige environment and we now unqualified even then the reporting was in it. Chairperson, members of the committee, moving on to the PMTE. I must mention that, as I think in the beginning, this is unaudited program information. And I would think that our annual report is due for when it becomes audited. So the information I'm presenting to you, I would not say it's unreliable. Our monitoring and evaluation process, but it could well change depending on our outcome. And moving straight into slide number 21, I will go through the various areas of performance. With respect to payment of invoices in 30 days, 87%, 164,000 out of 190,000 invoices were paid within a 30-day period. And there were great internal delays on submission, and we're moving and improving those processes. So we hide them out. We also had a number of supplier queries to prevent overpayments. The invoices were delayed, but we closed those gaps to achieve 100% overtime. And then four of 15 departments were approved with itemized billing. Chair, to talk about itemized billing is a very important part of what BFT does. We see itemized bills everywhere. When we buy something, the bill is itemized. So the BFT, the term of frequency, BFT is developing a regime and a system to provide itemized billing to its clients, to charge tariffs to those clients and hopefully in the future charge market-related tariffs. So itemized billing is a very much important part of the PMTE's development and operationalization. And during the year, we've begun to consummate four of these for client departments. And then we are also working another five are work in progress. And six that were targeted are not being implemented given the fact that those clients don't occupy stakeholder bodies. During the year, we've also approved a financial model which will drive very much the PMTE methodology moving on to SPF 20, 60%. Of birds were awarded with intoxicating stains. In this particular area, we've had challenges with it, where we're adding out business processes. And with respect to quotations, 64% of quotations were awarded within 30 days, as in the target of 77%. Our inability to obtain free quotes are responsible for our underachievement there by some 10% there. So we're working on improving that particular area, but it's not for want of not trying. And then with respect to empowerment, from a spend point of view, we've spent 90% of our budget on designated SME and other designated groups, and 91% of birds is the same indicator that we've spent on designated groups. So we continue to perform well in that particular area. Moving on to program two, which deals with our planning as well as investment management and precinct development, 20 or 42 user departments send their planning documents for the UM User Asset Management Plan. This is an articulation of the client accommodation requirements over the MTEF, and it helps the department to plan our own infrastructure delivery. Here we've received only 20 or 42, and it seems to a negative occurrence, but more than 20 was received. But they don't meet the requirements because some of them were not signed by the department, others were submitted as drafts, and others were in fact incomplete. So these were some of the concerns we had for the user asset management plan. Then we had this infrastructure work list. The infrastructure work list are the work lists we developed to plan client delivery, and 10 of a target of 10 were signed in a year under review. With respect to CRM, the customer relationship management strategy was in fact developed by the department, but not approved. And then moving on to precinct development plans identified with municipal IDPs, 5 such plans were developed against the target of 4, and with respect to sites established, 1 site of 3 targeted in there was established, and this is for Tswane, the HG Debit. We failed in 2 other areas, 1 is Howie, and this was delayed because of delayed municipal approval. And we also have a problem in Carolina. There seems to be a lack of market interest. We slowed down this particular program. Then with respect to concepts and concept design for user department, we had a target of 5 and we completed 5 such concepts and concept designs for user department. With respect to feasibility studies, we completed 255 and we achieved a full target of our feasibility studies. And these are feasibilities conducted before taking an investment decision, and our target was 90%, so we performed there. And also with respect to valuations, which are precursor to disposal, we achieved 92% of valuations within the scheduled prime time frame, and then 70% of disposal requests were also processed, and again the target of 90%. And Chairperson, members of the committee, we can't always sometimes consummate a disposal request because there seem to be a lack of consensus with all stakeholders. Very often a municipality wants a piece of land for a particular good purpose, but public works would see it otherwise and want to also receive some revenue for that purpose. But there's discussion that takes place, and sometimes there are delays because everybody expects it for free from the department, and we are also developing a business model. And then the CM, this CAMP, submitted to Treasury, in terms of GIAMA, the Act, clients are supposed to give us their user asset management plan, and we must give our custodial asset management plan to Treasury to show our entire infrastructure delivery program. But that's a target, and we submitted it on time during the year to National Treasury. Then, Chairperson, members of the committee, we also have a program where we assess performance in identified problems. And we assess performance to look at the performance, but this is not condition assessment as such. It's a different kind of performance of the asset, looking at cost and the like. You look at the water consumption, the electricity consumption, rate consumption, space utilization. That informs our building strategies. So we've done 850 during the year. That gives us a good platform next year to begin to implement those strategies. Then moving to construction. With respect to construction, there's some overachievement here. With respect to approved infrastructure project design, we targeted 83, we achieved 84. With respect to getting projects ready to go out on tender, We target 128, we achieve 135. With respect to site, the header over for construction, the site is prepared by the department, all formalities are dealt with and then handed over to contractors. We target 105, we achieve 107. Then also project completed, we came close to 100%, 103 of 105 projects were completed during the year. And some of this is the result of better project management, project monitoring and project support. Moving over to projects completed within agreed construction period, we agreed that we have completed 30 of 84. That is not entirely satisfactory, and is primarily the result of contractor incompetency and our challenges dealing with contractors. The contractors, the level of indiscipline is sometimes beyond our reach, and we seek and do our best to manage it. With respect to infrastructure completed within budget, we completed 68 within budget out of 84, and some of these chairperson why we don't reach budget is very often our client requests, they make last minute requests, we change the scope of the project, and because they are a client we have to satisfy them. And we also had an increase in tendency of community protests, and sometimes these delay a project, and that results in a greater cost being incurred. With respect to EPWP jobs, this is sometimes an important part of the construction. We created 5,607 of a target of 7,511 EPWP work opportunities of our own in the department through projects. And some of these, or some of the reasons for the underachievement as against targets is projects cancelled and some of them delayed due to clients not confirming funds. So that's affected us in a significant way. Then with respect to project backlogs, we only reduced 8% of the backlog as against 20%. The backlogs are own projects, essentially. It were commenced with a long time ago and sometimes abandoned. And what has transpired is it appears that the corrective work of the original contractors were taking longer than anticipated. And what is transpiring is that we then require greater periods to correct the deficiencies and the data that changed. And as a result, our project backlog is not being reduced against the target in standard. Then, chairperson and members of the committee, this one is a very sore point that I would be remiss of me not to identify that no contractors were incubated during through the contractor incubation program. The target set for the year was 297, and we've not achieved anything here. And what is transpiring is that we perhaps were over optimistic on how we deliver this. That if we incubate contractors, it means that we should not follow a tender process, but identify contractors and incubate them. And what has transpired here is that the deviation process with National Treasury is something that we're working on as a department. This is the last information I have, and we're hoping to improve our performance here with a full recognition that this is a significant failure given what we need to do as a department in dealing with small business here and contract incubation. Moving on to Program 4. Program 4 is Real Estate Management Services. This is a leasing business, and the leasing business deals both with leasing in and leasing out to the private sector. And here we have 636 of 600 lease agreements signed within scheduled time frame. So we are overperformed here, and we had a circular that came out yesterday, so far circular 48. It played a huge part in pushing this process forward. And then with respect to savings realized on private leases, we targeted savings. As you are aware, Chairperson, we were consummating these leases with the landlord, but we were demanding of savings. And we had certain limitations where we only have 5% increment, and to increase or to re-sign the lease, we were demanding better terms. And we saved 257 million during the year on 238 different leases. And then with respect to new leases awarded to black-owned companies, 39% as opposed to a 30% target were awarded to black-owned companies. And in no small part, this was driven by our newly adopted property empowerment policy. And then with respect to the security cluster, we support the steps to support the justice and the correctional services. And the view was that we need to reduce the extent of reliance on private buildings and new state-owned buildings. And in the year, we reduced 12 out of a target of 12 when we converted privately owned to state-owned buildings. So we managed to achieve well there. Then with respect to revenue generation to state-owned properties, we we achieved an increase of 9.5 million, which is a 21% compared to the previous year, as opposed to 10%, which was the target. So we've achieved well there. And then 95, again, the target of 65 vacant surplus state-owned properties were let out. And this was driven heavily by our national marketing campaign, where we got everybody mobilized and created public awareness. And then with respect to state-owned properties verified to confirm occupation status, we've done 505 of these and a target of 400 during the year under review. With respect to state-owned properties, occupation status rectified, we rectified 21 with a target of 20, and how we rectified is we achieved 19 evictions. And also what we've done is 2 rectifications, which means our records display the incorrect status of occupation. Then with respect to spatial and economic development frameworks completed by identified rural towns, we had a target of 3. We've not done this at all. And what we have is, this is part of Operation Partisa, that the rural, the coastal towns, is part of Operation Partisa. And we've had this Operation Partisa lab only in November 2018. And that lab, they developed the strategy on how we view the small harbors and the SEDF net area. So that did delay the progress. But we should see substantial results in the current year. And then we're seeing revenue to rentals of harbor properties and also work opportunities. They've been delayed in our framework and created poor performance here. And with respect to revenue, there's been a 5% increase against a target of 10%. And with respect to work opportunities, our actual was 778 with respect to a target of 1,000. So we slightly underperformed here. And as I mentioned, our letting our framework will drive the process in the year ahead. Moving on to program 5. Program 5 is the real estate information and registry branch and services. That with respect to approve this disposal, 60% as against the 8% target of approved disposal in respect of socio-economic purposes for transfer were consummated. 100% of assets were updated on the immovable asset register for assets under construction. There's often a problem that we buy and update our assets register. When we construct, we forget to update the register. So we've begun to do that with more diligence now. Then with respect to land parcel vested, this is a vesting process through rural development where a property does not have an owner, except it is state-owned. And between ourselves and the provinces, we determine based on its use who owns it. We had a target of 800, but we only vested 359. And this is largely due to system issues. The land administration web and the report for vesting lies with DRDLR. So it's a cross-dependency with that department that's resulted in an underperformance here. Moving over to buildings physically verified for existence, as a result of capacity limitation, we verify the existence and we verify the buildings on a cyclical basis. In a year under review, we targeted just under 20,000 and we achieved just under 10,000, it's about 50% level of performance due to capacity limitations. And these buildings are all over, and it's difficult to get to all of them. So we need to improve our capacity as well as perhaps change the cycle of review and physical verification of these buildings. Then the number of buildings assessed to determine the condition of significant components. This is a component project. And we targeted some 15,000 components, I believe, in the year ahead, and we've not consummated this project because of funding limitations. So we have not appointed a service provider to assist or engage this project because of funding limitations, but the identification of building components is a very important part of our asset register program. And one must be open and honest that we could not continue with the program due to a lack of funds. Then with respect to the 9 provinces, we, through our concurrent function, we're responsible for conducting certain oversight over the provinces. And during the year under review, we've assessed all 9 provinces for compliance with respect to the immovable asset register. And compliance, of course, is based again on the general assertion of completeness, evaluation, and the like. Moving on to program number 6, Chair and members of the committee, I'm moving to a program called Facilities Management. Facilities Management is dealing with the taking care of buildings on an ongoing basis, as well as dealing with our green building program. And during the year under review, We targeted 500 facilities management of term contracts, and we achieved 1,036 because of a big drive in our region to have term contracts. I mentioned earlier, using Prestige as an example, that ad hoc requisitioning of services and goods from companies results in a huge turnaround time and increasing cost, and these term contracts really help to shorten the turnaround time as well as the quality of service to our clients. So it's a very important part of proactive maintenance rather than emergency reactive maintenance. Then moving on to unscheduled reported maintenance resolved within prescribed time frame. This has been 3.89% as against a target of 15% unscheduled maintenance resolved within the prescribed time frame. And then I move on to term contracts awarded to BlackRock companies, 87% as against the target of 15% was awarded to BlackRock companies. And then with respect to a reduction in energy consumption, during the year under review, through various programs, we have targeted our stakeholder bodies to save 150 million kilowatt hours, and we've achieved 187 million of a saving. So we've upscaled the implementation of a retrofitting program, and it also greater awareness among our clients of saving, energy saving. It's greater awareness among all of us. And then I move on to one sore point, which is a failure on our part. We also have a program to generate energy, and we targeted 10 million kilowatt hours generation, and we've achieved zero. And what I want to say, Chair, is that it was naive of us, again, to begin to even measure energy generation. We should have rather measured our processes to get us and to set up the systems and those photovoltaic and solar panels in order to give effect to savings. So we're still in the preparatory phases. So we perhaps were measuring savings or energy generation too soon, but we're still in the preparatory phases of this particular program. So we are all our hands up there that we've not reached the stage where we start to generate renewable energy. We're very much into the preparatory phases. Then a reduction in water consumption, we had an 8 million kiloliter reduction, and we've achieved 12 million during the year under review. So that's been a good level of performance with respect to water and electricity saving, and not a very good one with respect to energy generation. Moving on to the audit findings, Chair, members of the committee, as I mentioned, that this is under review, so we're waiting to hear on the results of the audit finding of our respective program in the PMTD. And what is audited is programs 3, 2, 3, 5, and 6, which is real estate investment services, construction, the asset registry, and facilities management are under audit during the year. And at that point, Chair, I'll hand over to my colleagues to present the financial picture.
Okay. We will only comment and ask questions after this thing. Let's just move.
Thank you. After I'm going to present the financial performance for the fourth quarter. And this is the cumulative report for DPW.
Yeah, I don't want to be
My name is Aaron Mazu, Chief Director, Financial Management at the DPW. And I'm representing the
Legal. Colleagues, members of the committee, my name is Cynthia Aspeto, I'm the DVD of Aaron.
The report that I'm presenting is the fourth quarter performance, financial performance for DPW. As indicated, this is the community. That means we are considering the expenditure of the financial year until the end of the financial year. As DDGGRC indicated, DPW has been audited and the audit is completed. So what you are presenting is audited financial performance information. Now, for 2018-19, the department was allocated total budget of 7.5 billion. And at the end of the financial year, the expenditure is 4.48 billion. And the underspending overall is 35 million. So in terms of the percentage, it will be a significant percentage. Hence, you still have underspending, but in terms of the percentage, we're still saying 100%. The value is around 99.7%. Now, for economic classification under the current payment, we have three items: compensation of employees, goods and services, and interest. So under compensation of employees, that is your salaries and other related items, we had a budget of 580 million, and the expenditure at the end of financial year is 496 million. Now if you go to slide number 33, it will give the reasons, but I also talk to the reasons for underspending. Now the variance or the underspending related to three programs. That is program one, it's underspent by 14 million. Program two, underspent by 2 million. And program three, underspent by 5 million. That makes 21 million. Under goods and services, expenditure is 100%. Interest, 395,000 was spent, which is 100%. Transfers and subsidies. If you go to slide 32, it will give you percentage-wise how much is the transfer budget for the department. You will realize that we have 87% of the budget. It means 87% of the budget for the department from 7.4 billion is allocated under the transfer. Now, for all the items under the transfer, it was 100%. Because this is the money that has been transferred to other institutions. Like under provinces and municipalities, it's mainly for EPWP incentives. We had a budget of 1.5 billion and 1.5 billion was transferred to both provinces and municipalities. Under departmental agencies, these are the entities relating to the department. You have your TMTE, CIDB, CBE, ACLIMA, and IDT as entities of the department. And also under the departmental agencies and accounts, we have transferred fully as per appropriation. The other item under the transfer is your foreign government and international organization. This is a transfer to an international organization called Commonwealth War Crimes Commission. The budget was 28 million and we have transferred 100%. Public corporation and private enterprises. This is the transfer meant for this is a transfer to IDT. Non-profit institution is a transfer to IDT, but for the purpose of EPWP, which is called non-state sector incentive. The budget is 720 million, and 720 million was transferred to IDT. Household, this is a transfer within the department for its gratuities. The budget was 9.3 million, 8.7 was spent, and the underspending is an insignificant amount of 601. The last classification is machinery and equipment. This is your office furniture and your office equipment. The budget was 21 million, and the actual expenditure is 9 million, and we had an underspending of 12 million. Now overall we have two areas of underspending in the department, that is your compensation of employees and machinery and equipment. And there's a link between the compensation of employees and machinery and equipment, because if you don't appoint, you might not be able to buy the furniture because you're not making the equipment. So So the delay in compensation of employees, it will have the impact on the machinery and equipment. So I've already spoken to slide number 32 in terms of the allocation to say where the bulk of the budget, as you can see, of like 32, 87% is allocated under transfers, 7% machinery and equipment, and 6% under goods and services. So slide number 34. Was 33 the notes that I was explaining the areas of understanding. Slide 34. In slide 34, it's linked to the transfers. Because in slide 31, you don't see the institutions that receive money from the department. Now, slide 34, it gives you who receives the transfers and how much. The first one is CIDB, they received 73 million. The second one is CBA, 50 million. The third one is IDT, 28 million. Commonwealth War Crimes, 22 million. Parliamentary Village, 10 million. PMTE, 4 billion. EPWP incentives, all the incentives to provinces, municipalities, and the one that I said is allocated to IDT for non-state sector. So the total EPWP incentives, 2.2 billion, and we spent 100% of the 2.2 billion. The other one is CHEA, Construction Education Training Authority, 518. The other transfer went to Agrima SA, 18 million. And the last one is the household, the one that I need to do the transfer. All in all, the transfer budget is 6.5 billion, and 6.5 billion was transferred to the entity. Slide 35. To slide 35 is linked to slide 37 to slide 41. So here it is a summary of the programs without showing the economic classification, the compensation of employees, goods and services, machinery and equipment, and transfers. Now this is still the same as what we presented in slide 31. But here we are showing the performance per program. In this slide, you will see that program one, administration, with a budget of 470 million, 448 million was spent, equivalent to 95%. And the underspending is 22 million. So the underspending is in two areas. That will be your compensation of employees and machinery and equipment. Intergovernmental, program two, 53 million, 50 million spent, equivalent to 95, and with the underspending of 2.6. As indicated, 2 million of the underspend in this program relates to compensation of employees. Program 3, expanded public works program, with a budget of 2.5 billion, 2.5 billion spent, equivalent to 100%. As indicated previously, that the underspending in this program relates to compensation of employees for 5 million. The fourth program is 4 billion budget. The actual expenditure is also 4 billion. And in this program, this is where the entities of the department are being paid. The last program is program 5, Prestige, with a budget of 188 million. And the expenditure for the end of March is 185 million, with an underspending of 3.7 million. And also here, the underspending is linked to machinery and equipment. So without repeating what I've just presented, we also included the information for the programs. As indicated that program one, the underspending will be under compensation of employees, and machinery and equipment is 22 million dollars spent. Now we give you the same up until slide number 41 for program 5, and this will be the end of the DPW financial performance. Thank you.
On slide 43 is the revenue budget. And as you can see, we do not just get into we do not get into operation. We get transferred from public goods, but the rest of the rest of the budget is through revenue. So our total budget for the financial year, the total revenue budget for the financial year was 3.951 billion rand, of which our actual receipt was 19.2 billion rand. The biggest anomaly or variance this year is, if we look at the first one, accommodation charges leasehold. This is the private leases that we lease properties in and then we lease it out to our clients again. We received more money here than we budgeted for, but this is because of prior year outstanding debt that we managed to receive during the 2018-19 financial year. Accommodation charges state-owned, this is a combination of two items. It is what we lease out our state-owned accommodation for, which is at a very nominal rate, but that is about 4 billion rand. The balance of the budget is client capital. We're also classified in our financial statements as accommodation charges, as the client is contributing to state-owned accommodation. This revenue is linked to the expenditure. It is a recoverable item, so if we, for every 1 rand we spend, we will receive 1 rand in revenue back. There's nothing, there's no markup on it. And because we underspend, when I get to the expenditure, we see we underspend on the client capital budget, therefore we also, our receipt was less than what we budgeted for in the beginning of the financial year. Accommodation charges for our private, that is the bit of property that we are currently renting out, which will be increasing after it, we under recovered 3 million rand there. Augmentation is related to what Aaron just now presented, that is the transfer we received from DPW, 4 billion rand. This mostly goes to our compensation and goods and services. Then interest and funds and other receipts, we received 11 million rand more than we budgeted for. This is mainly because we are making use in some of our projects of implementing agents. We make transfer payments to them, and this money is put in a separate bank account, and all of the interest that is earned on those bank accounts is paid back to the PNC. We earn the interest on that. Municipal services are recoverable, and this is the agency service. We pay electricity accounts, and we claim that from the client. The amount that we have that we we're projecting to receive was 4.4 billion rand. We only received 3.7 billion. When I get to the slide later on debt, which you'll see, this is one of our biggest concerns, is that clients are not paying us back for the municipal services we pay on their bill. Municipal services management fees, this is the 5% that we charge on all the municipal accounts that we do handle, and there we basically receive 9% of what we budgeted for. So all in all, we received 1.7 billion rand less than what we budgeted. If I can take it to slide 44, this is a breakdown for economic classification. On current payments, we see that we managed to spend 98% of the budget. We had a 12.2 billion rand budget at the end of the year, or what we projected, and our actual expenditure was 11.9 billion rand. The biggest anomaly here was the repair budget, which underspent by 100% which underspent by 107 million rand. This is infrastructure project. I think Mr. Faisal already touched on some of the challenges that we are experiencing with contractors and in the project environment, and we were not able to spend all of the money that was allocated there. Day-to-day maintenance, we spent 99% of the budget. Property rates are underspent by 176 million rand. Now this is money that was mostly set aside for arrears property rates. We are busy with a huge exercise in government debt, and we try to budget for these accounts to pay all of them off. Unfortunately, this is an exercise that is not going as fast as we would like to, because we need full reconciliation between us and the municipalities agreeing on what is the amount outstanding and what we have paid and so on. So unfortunately, that amount was not paid in the last financial year, but the program is continuing, and we have made provision for the year. Compensation of employees, we managed to spend 100% of the budget. On goods and services, we overspend by 46 million rand. The reason for this is actually we underspend 100 million rand for goods and services, but this is a write-off. I must just also qualify that these figures have not been audited, it's still being audited. But this is the write-off at the end of the year. We do not make provision in the budget for write-off. And at the end of the year, all of the defaulting and all of the damages and losses were written off, and that amounted to 146 million rand. And that was written off against the group of services budget, which shows there's an overexpenditure of 46 million rand. If we look at capital payments, capital non-recoverable, that is our own budget, that is refurbishment, upgrading, that type of thing that we use our state-owned accommodation charges to spend the money. We managed to spend most of it, but unfortunately we only spent 94%, we're still 87 million that other states. Machinery and equipment, we spent 29 million of the 31 million that was allocated. Capital recoverable is the one that I touched on when I was talking about revenue. The budget allocated to us by the clients was 2.7 billion. We only managed to spend 1.7 billion, so we underspend by close to a billion there on this budget. There's different reasons for it. again, we have discussed contractor performance and so on. But another problem that we have here is the client, the budget is not with us. Although we show the budget on our budget because it's revenue, it's cash flow that goes through our budget, these budgets are actually on the client's books, which means that every time that there is any change, before you go out to tender, we have to go to the client and ask them permission to say, this is our estimate. Or if you are fine with this, we will go out to tender. If the tender comes in higher, we have to go back to the client and say that the tender has come in higher, do you agree with that? And we don't have a problem with that because essentially that is how any client relationship will work. But the problem we have at this stage is that there's a huge delay. It can sometimes take up to 3 months before a client will come back and confirm their money. We also try to, when you do the E&E, part of the E&E that you submit to National Treasury is infrastructure schedules. We're supposed to be listing all the infrastructure that you will be doing. We sit with all of the clients in October, we go through all of the projects, we agree on the projects that we will be doing. Obviously, commitment running other construction projects and multi-year projects. We agree on these projects, but they need to sign it off before we can actually implement the full program. That's the work list that we, Mr. Faisal referred to, the 10 out of 10 work list. Those 10 work lists were signed off, but they were not signed, ideally they should be signed off in November of the year, because then we can distribute it to project managers, they can start planning, get tender documents ready, and go out to tender so we can start sending them on the 1st of April. Unfortunately, some of the clients only signed off these workers on the 31st of March, which then makes it very difficult for us to spend all of the money. So on capital, unfortunately, of the 4.2 billion rand, we only managed to spend 3.1 billion, which was 75%. In total of the 16 billion rand budget, we spent 15 billion. We're showing municipal services is covered at the bottom because it doesn't form part of our financial statement, as it is an agency service, but it does have an impact on our cash flow, and that's why we include it in the budget. I think the next slide is just to show the relationship, and then slide 46 and 47 is basically what I've discussed already. And then slide 48 is, again, it's the same information just per program. You will see that program 1, administration, spend 99% of its budget. Real estate investment, 97%. Unfortunately, program 3, construction project management, that is where all of the infrastructure, the refurbishment, and all of those budgets are, only managed to spend 79% of the budget. On slide 51, We have this basic information. This is high level to give an indication of the different types of budgets we have, which I've already showed under the revenue accumulation charges state owned. So in the beginning of 2018, we had an opening balance of 3.5 billion rand. We received 1.6 billion rand for prior years, and we still have 1.8 billion rand outstanding for prior years. The invoice amount for 2018-19 was 15.7 billion, and of that we received 13.4 billion, which is an 85% recovery rate. Our total outstanding debt to book at this stage is 4.1 billion rand. You will see that municipal services of this 4.1 billion rand, 2.5 billion is municipal services. We clients are not paying us. On slide 52, it's the same information, but there's been an aging on it. On the 4.1 billion, see that 448 million rand is current, 148 million rand is 50 days, and 1.6 billion is over 60 days. The total for 18-19 is 2.2 billion rand, which is 68% of our debt, and then for previous years before 18-19 is 1.8 billion rand, or 52% of the outstanding debt. We have started to charge interest on outstanding debt. It's something that was not done previously because it was government to government. There was a feeling that we should not be charging interest, but at the rate that clients are not paying us, we didn't have another option. So we have some key initiatives that we are putting in place. First of all, is we have sent letters to National Treasury to ring-fence the accommodation charges. Because one of the problems with accommodation charges is every time Treasury puts through a cut, like in this new NPF, that's forcing everybody to cut 5, 6, and 7%, and automatically they're trying to go through the accommodation charges, and they cut more than the 5, 6, and 7%. We've had instances where clients who cut 50% of our budget to accommodate the 5%. So we have written a letter to the National Treasury to say please ring fence this money and the commitment on the client's budget so that they can't use it for something else. We have started charging interest on outstanding balance as with effect from the 1st of November. The Minister has also sent letters to the top 16 clients or colleagues to urge them to please pay the outstanding accounts within the next 30 days. And we are busy with an agreement on billing and recovery that has it has been developed. We will be signing it with the client. Thank you.
Sure.
It is recommended that the portfolio committee.
Maybe we can get an update.
far away for the lifestyle. And then my issue lies was actually my and the purpose of actually my essay in the Department of Public Works. And the initial purpose was to assist the housing settlement. We spoke about it before you came in. And I wanted to have a clarity. What is the goal now that ACRIMA is not assisting where it's supposed to be assisting? What is the role now in public works? Because we are giving them money and then for the main purpose of actually home housing settlement to get us everything. But now the test material which is going to be exported, which means the South African resources, we are spending for other people to gain something. Coming to public works, to EPWP, public works says they are offering skills. I don't know which skills those are. We are spending money on EPWP, and it's a good thing. But because we've got CETA and then we've got other departments that are giving out internships. And one of the questions that come to my mind, if we talk about skills, what we talk about? Because most of the times it's EPWP that we see are the ones that sweeping streets, they are cleaning graveyards, they are assisting at old age homes. So if we say that we are giving them skills, what skills are those that they can use and get a job somewhere else? The vacant post that has caused that are mentioned in the report that they've been covered. Are they not? Because it's only a certain percentage that has been covered and still been outstanding. Is it not hindering the day-to-day running of public works all over South Africa? And then what systems are going to be put in place to ensure that actually the clients are paid on time, because we have got a crisis of clients who sending invoices at a later stage, which may hinder the audit report of from the AGs. And then before payments are made to the client, is there any oversight that is actually done by officials from the West? Because we find that they are saying they've constructed 1, 2, 3 for the next thing, there's no building. We get days of vacant land, there's nothing. We've experienced some of those things. Is there anything that's done about that? Before we do the payments, is there any oversight? Is it that done by the Department of Public Sector officials? In the last meeting when we met, I can see here in the report, it talks about the amount and everything. But one of my requests was, can we be provided with a list of buildings that belong to public sector? And then buildings that are leased to private sector. And then buildings that we are renting as public sector. And how much can we be provided with that list? That was one of the requests I made in the last. I was hoping that it would be there, but I only see a report on amount, how much has been retrieved, and how much is still outstanding in the shop. And that was it.
Thank you very much. My name is Alfred Matthew. So I must start by indicating to the department that where they have done well, we credit them. But where they haven't done well, we are definitely going to criticize them. I see correspondence on an issue of the BEE. Based on the indicators that they have leases that actually given to black people in that. And also, when you look at slide 24, However, Chair, I must indicate that the end of night 18, I think the issue of the same as an unqualified are not certain well, I can understand that in some practice regulations that some of these jobs are actually being provided by different departments, if I can talk to you. But I would be interested to know from ourselves, the department, as to how have we fit in terms of the process. But I can't say unless maybe just pass the meeting without seeing it as to how did we fit. Well, the other matter is the issue of the vacancies that you spoke about. I heard you that you said that there was a number of that is why you had to up to 73%, if I can check that percentage is correct. But, well, looking at the employees, that you came here running over there. There's too many men, too many old people. I'm not so sure if maybe your recruitment is how you die, even as you continue to fill the other vacant posts. One would wish that you actually improve. So that the department continues to exist and to perform good. Well, the other thing that I just want to check for you, I haven't heard where we speak about the as part of immovable assets, the availability of land, as to how much of the land that we have. But not only that, because we have been part of the land that we also have outside the country that belongs to us as a country. Well, the 4.1 billion land that is being owed to the department. I'm not so sure because there is no recovery plan that has been outlined as to how you're going to that money. Well, I hear that Ms. Prince spoke of interest, charging interest and so on. But you are not telling us that the 4.1 to do this is how this is what you are going to use to recover. You are just telling us about the issue of interest. And I'm not so sure if you do not say because there are some municipalities that are struggling to see if you do not defend the problem, the charges are going to escalate whatever is being voted to the department. So, but my main concern is on the issue of how are we going to get one 4.1 MP. But again, I just wish to know that we as a department, aren't we only in municipalities? Because I think that must be if the same money or any money has been put to municipalities and how we intend to pay those municipalities. Or some of the municipalities are struggling today because of the government department. Maybe provincial or national that are not servicing their debts or paying for the services. So we must not be adding on the problems that they have. And also, last chair, there's an issue of certainties that we must stay client. We must stay those who are our service providers, to whom we are a client. But do we have anything in the form of a policy that says if you have completed your job and your job is to complete, you must submit invoice within say 10 days or within 30 days so that you are able to kind of pay you within 30 days? Because we know that there are those who deliberately want to complain and want to come to complain to us as politicians to say, I completed the job for a month ago and I have not been paid. So that we look at you and see you as people who are doing a job. So I just want to check that. In an event that we do not have that, I think it's something that you need to take into consideration. That the person that will stay with you forever, sometimes being even passive, a financial aid into another financial aid. Thank you very much. Check.
Yeah,
yeah,
we can. Thank you, Chairperson, and welcome the detailed report. Later on, we met with the AG team. I understand that they will come around October for the outcome. But there is an issue of organogram, that you have two organograms. Maybe you can tell us which is which. Number two, there is a parliamentary regulations that was used. I think it's 10,268. Mm-hmm. 10 million. Oh, okay. This is 10 million. It's okay. I thought it's 10,000. Okay. But the parliamentary village is where the members the Sala court. And there is the issue of showers or currently was 17 amount, then by the majority of members, they complain about things, but they need showers. But there is the department promised to do that, but till now there is no indication that they will be showers in our region. Lastly, the public works expanded public program is a good program, but here we are talking about the skills. But to be honest, I won't ask you, because the Department of Public Works, if you have a program, every day or in every presentation, we complained about this program. Ukuthi if department ayinayo exit strategy, for example, ababantu basebenza kwa public works baba ne contract maybe 3 years or 2 years, then mabephuma bahlala ekhaya. Yet today we are told the scheme can be scheme into ukuthi abantu bayashayela ba. It was corner, but you must tell us, Clammy, we should this group do this, this group do this. So, if it's a deal, it's okay, but I'm going there. Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Barclay Gallup. I'm the new speaker, but also run to
echo the sentence in welcoming the detailed report. Chairperson, firstly, I want to establish that even though I'm new, right, my second hand, but new in the portfolio, I need to understand the reporting structure, because as I received the report and I read through it, I saw the performance and I saw the financial expenditure, but there's no way nowhere where the two were merged, where I could see the actual performance versus the financial expenditure. Example, there's a lot of things that have been targeted, and then we receive the report that the target hasn't been reached. Some of them 0%, but there's no way where I could see how much were budgeted for those, and if there was a budget, maybe it wasn't reached because there was no budget. But when I look at the financial expenditure, it's 99% that has been reached in terms of the budget. So I need some clarification there to help me, before I make any assumptions, to help me understand this better. Then when I look at, we know what is the one of the key challenges in our country currently is unemployment. And even though we have the concerns in terms of the EWP project, we value that project because some people will say half a loaf of bread is better than nothing. And that's exactly what this program is providing. It's providing temporary relief to those unemployed people who have nothing on the table. So if I see the report that has been presented, and it states to me that the target is missed by more than 400,000 placements, it's a point of concern for me. So to me, I see how many people could have been saved. I don't know if you understand. How many people could have had half a loaf of bread on the table through that initiative? So I want to ask you, what are you doing to ensure that proper enforcement is being done in terms of the placement of those EPWP workers? Then, I need some report in terms of your current vacancy rate, because you've reported that there's been a moratorium. Has it been lifted? How long was it? What's going to happen going forward, taking into consideration the crisis of unemployment currently? So what is your current vacancy rate, and how do you plan moving forward to remedy that situation? Because when I look at your different programs, I see all the programs are starting with under expenditure, firstly because of compensation of employees. So can I have some clarification in terms of that? Then when you reported in terms of people who's employed, you indicated different under expenditures or different targets that haven't been met, including the youth. And but my concern is also I'm echoing that, but I'm commending you in terms of your high target of women that you are employing, even though it doesn't necessarily relate to quality jobs, because we can see it's a male choir in front of us. So we want to see that 60 some couple percentage, we want to see that women are not employed just for ticking box exercises, but they are being employed in positions of responsibility, senior or at least being groomed to occupy senior management positions, and not and later on being acknowledged for upward mobility posts instead of a person from another department or from outside being employed into those positions because there's no sufficient experience in house. So in terms of the disability sector, I see that you are talking about the 1% and people being employed with disabilities. So my question is, what are you doing to come closer to the national target in terms of employing people with disabilities? Then, Chairperson, they are talking about the infrastructure project completed within the agreed period is only 30 out of 84. And they are saying the main reason is due to contractors not doing what they are supposed to do. So my question would be, time is money. And even though that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be paid more or the department will lose money through them not finishing within time, but we need to move with speed because service delivery needs to happen out there. So if contractors are a problem, then I feel that contractors incubation thing, that thing should be moved with speed so that we can get rid of those people, because truth be told, there are some contractors, because they know that government is relying on them, because there's not a lot of skills out there, they are doing what they are currently doing. So I really need to re-emphasize that contracting incubation thing should get off the ground. Then, Chairperson, we've had that on page 53 that the minister sent letters for payment to the 16 clients, or top 16 clients, to pay within 30 days upon the receipt of the letter, if not one day. I'm just asking. Because, Chairperson, if we look at clients not paying back for municipal services, there needs to be, apart from that, ring-fencing strategy and what engaging with Treasury, can we have an indication if those non-payments are all only relating to government departments, or what are you doing in terms of private sector? Or do we have such clients, or what's happening there? Because surely that needs to be really dealt with. I think, Chair, I'll pause there for now. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I'm asking the question for my colleague, Honourable Kopane, who has had to take an urgent call. It relates to the Public Works Academy that hasn't been approved. Her question is, very simply, this is not the first time we've heard this, and what is going to be done to capacitate PMTE if this Public Works Academy doesn't get going or doesn't get off the ground? Where do we go from here? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. So a few questions, and to some extent it may be covered by some of my colleagues. So name is Wayne Bring. Slide 11, combating fraud, corruption in the department and PMTE indicates that 100% of investigations reported allegations against the target of 100%. The question here is, those are investigations initiated, what about consequence management? Auditor General reports that we had early on in the day indicate one of the serious lacks that we have in, from local government right up to national government is a failure of consequence management. So initiating the reports or investigation is one thing, but of those 100% investigations initiated, what is the consequence management arising from that? That also against the backdrop that some 89% of the irregular expenditure, again within your local government right up to national government, 89% of the irregular expenditure seems to be not recovered, according to the report that we received again this morning. 89% of unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure not dealt with. Alright, so again, that backdrop, what are some of the results? I think that on slide 12, 11% of reduction in irregular expenditure, again, just not acceptable. The target is 100%, and you're only achieving 11% with regards to, and this is looking at the challenges that the economy and the country is facing. Right now, we're hearing bleak reports of where the economy is, and to have an 11% reduction of irregular expenditure against a target of 100% certainly just cannot fly. I think my colleagues have also spoken about the EPWP aspect by 15, basically a success rate there of about 66%, 997,000 against a target of 1.4 million. Certainly I think with the high unemployment rate, 29% unemployment rate, we certainly can do better in improving those targets of the EPWP. I'm concerned, slide 16, of property, construction, industry, policy and research, on the failure to implement. All three paragraphs, all three bullet points, initial target was to submit. That wasn't done. Proposed amendments to the CIDB Act and its regulations require further consideration. So, and the third bullet point again. So I'm concerned. I'm concerned that there seems to be a lack of capacity in terms of what the property construction industry policy and research ought to be doing, and why is it that they seem not to be able to produce what they're supposed to produce. And I think possibly just the last two or three points is in our meeting that we had earlier this year, prior to our recess, I think most of the political parties asked what is the progress on putting an asset register together. And I think that we were told it's a work in progress. And if we aren't able to properly quantify what we own, how are we going to manage if we don't know what we own? So I'm still not hearing, this is now slide 22, 20 or 42 user effort management plans you see from client departments. So the progress in terms of developing a comprehensive or putting together or presenting a comprehensive asset register. What it is that we own, and I think my colleague also, what is it that we own, what is it that we are leasing, and so on. Slide 24, no contractor incubator, through the contractor incubator program. My question there is where perhaps there's a lack of capacity in our department. Is it not possible to look at intergovernment other departments that may be able to do what we were not able to do? And I know that there may be some legal challenges in terms of policies and so on that we have. But I also know that trade and industry, for example, is looking at contractors and growing our contractor base, particularly with regards to the disadvantaged in our country. So the simple question is, are we not also able to look at other government departments to assist in that regard. I am concerned, 525, just with regards to the condition of the buildings that we own. There have been recently in the media reports of how some of the buildings are actually health hazards. Employees have had to be evacuated because of air conditioners that are not working and other health hazards, lifts that are not working, fire policies that should have been implemented not implemented. Let me give you an example as well. In my community in which I live, and I don't know whether Public Works is responsible for this particular school, but the females in that school have to go and visit toilets that are not working, that have been used previously, that have not been flushed, that have become completely unhygienic, with maggots in the toilets and infections. That's in the media. I live 1 kilometer, I taught at the school. Now these are some of the conditions, and so when I'm speaking about health compliances, we own the buildings. We talk about maintaining the buildings. They put those temporary toilets for the students to use, where money had been allocated for the repairs of toilets, just so that our girl children are able to decently learn in a decent environment. So if we aren't able to get these compliances right, it's going to be a challenge. Chair, I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Honourable Michelle. Thank you, Chair. To the Deputy Minister and your team. Other colleagues touched on some of the issues I wanted to touch. My apologies, I will move up and down in trying to avoid the repetition. Probably let me start with the general issue. Nearly everywhere you go, you find buildings and houses, and there's the view that there are houses of public works, and in their majority, they have been hijacked by our foreign brothers. Perhaps do you know the number of properties that you own in the whole country as public works? In the hostel where I, in the village where I reside here in Cape Town, there are buildings which are roofed with asbestos, which is the health hazard. And I know of a hospital in the province where I come from, Mpumalanga, that is also roofed with asbestos. You would probably know the number of buildings that we have that were housing people being roofed with asbestos. Like 13. What you are saying, 100% of reported case of fraud and corruption subjected to disciplinary process. How many in terms of numbers? Are they 2? Are they 10? slide 12 and then take a general comment on what I'm going to talk about in slide 12. We have got targets there. Slide number 3, the target is 70%. My observation is that either you overachieve or you underachieve. When you are playing, it is allowed that you can achieve plus or minus. But here, like I've given an example of bullet number 3, 26%, you had planned 70%. It basically says that you did nothing. It will be acceptable if you fail close path. On the other slide, I think it's like 20 somewhere there. Yeah. 359 of the 800 land parcel. I believe when you come here to the portfolio committee for it to approve the ACT, you say you want 10 rand, this is what you want. And when you underachieve in that particular fashion, what is the impact of service delivery on the ground? I'm taking this at a general. I don't want to go page by page. I'm just giving an example that there are instances where you do not even meet half of your target. Does this happen because there was, what is the relationship of this failure versus the budget? Your report indicates understanding on compensation of employees, and you have a moratorium. What part of the reason I hear there's a moratorium? What is the impact of service delivery? In relation to the fact that you can appoint people even when you have money. I think let us go back again to slide 14, bullet number 4. Beneficiaries participating in DPWPC, this development program. Thank you.
which skills did we produce, and can I be clarified around that figure versus with the target? If the figure is greater than the target, where did we get the budget to advance those skills? I believe when you put a target, you put a target because there are rests and things that are budgeted for. So if there is a balloon figure, where did we get this understanding? On page 15, there are percentages there for the 3% to the 8. Do we have the number in terms of quantity? To say this 43% represents 5, 10 or 20, can we be furnished with that? With your explanation in relation to the EPWP, I think colleagues raised some of the issues that probably are of a concern to me. But I think you were smart enough to indicate that you part of it is just reporting data, it's not issues that are within your affairs. But part of it is that how are we guarding ourselves against exploitation of our people with this EPWP problem? What is our interest is to provide these relief job opportunities. Are we conscious of the fact that this good intention might become bad intention by exploiting our people? On the lease agreement, check. More often than not, when the department leases a property, it pays a lot of money. But when I go to the department to lease a property, I pay less. I am told when I was filling in the form that I was sent there, I saw there's an amount there that I'm paying 202 rand. So accommodation is cheap in Cape Town, accordingly. Any villager can come here in Cape Town as long as you can get it from government. That is the assumption. Why, when you lease from government, you are paying something that does not even exist anywhere? And I know somewhere that there is a farmer who leases one property where he pays 3,000 per annum to this person. And I wonder whether in the market where you can get such. So just like that farm, I have not seen any documentation, but that farmer told us that's paying 3,000. And now I believe it because I'm also paying 202 rand per month. It's less than 2,000 rand per annum. So in a prime length, I'm paying that. So it means it's certain. At the same time, CMCE is not doing well. This trading part of this entity, how is it planning to be productive such that it begins to generate an income. What is the plan of this department? How are we going to turn things around? We've got many buildings throughout the country which are not productive, owned by public works. What is the plan? Would that change? Let me stop there.
Thank you, members. That's your comment for me. On the issue of EPWP and skills, I think maybe it's on the tip of the tongue. Because EPWP concentrates mainly on unskilled labor. So it can't be that today we are reformed, but we are still impacted on EPWP. So I believe maybe the mistake that was made there. I appreciate that the Deputy Minister is visited in the region. I think the first time that we went to definitely is Acacia Park, in which most of us in this committee attended. There have been many complaints. So you have assisted us because now we are going to raise complaints that we should raise. One of the things about the aspect referring to what is inside, it's worth. This was, there has been a 10 million allocated. Was it for refurbishment? Was it for renovation? What was it for? And when we came in on the induction, I think we have not been set one committee at the time. One member raised the fact that the Akashi Park, there was a gymnasium used there, but it is empty. I don't know which year now, since it was built. There's nothing there. And I believe that it's probably good for them to do that. And then someone said that they're going to remove material inside this one. And we said, no, it can't be like that. So I don't know, this 10 million. What was it actually for? Because when we say there's nothing new there that you would say this one has been bought in this year or in this term. In fact, we were informed that the furniture was changed in the last term. So what was this 10 million for? As we have indicated. Sir. But there is. I'm just writing on that one because the Deputy Minister didn't. I just want to check. Remember some of the issues that you are raising today. Some of them, Michael Duval is the first quarter. You did report to us, especially on the ACP. I want to check on this issue of the staff. Apparently now there's a monitoring. Has it been signed by the city administration or what? The issue of the monitoring that you are raising. Last time we were told of so many cases that are with SIU, so many internal cases within the department. And now it's 100% they've been taken to DC. Whereas we're still waiting for a report of cases that were reported to us. So that you see that some are with the SIU, some we have not yet finalized. And now everything is fine, it's 100%. So I think can you expatiate more on that one? Which cases are you referring to? Are they new cases since you met that you have involved? Or are you referring to the one that you reported to us? Thank you.
Check.
Thank you.
Yeah, my approach in the ordinary, I should need to do more than to check. When we are reporting for the fourth quarter, that is the last quarter, can you try and show up if we are reaching our target, your annual target? Because we must not talk about the fourth quarter in isolation with the other quarter. Somewhere in your document, you are showing us 100%, 100%. I hope that relates to things. If you have reached your target, I hope that it means. Isn't that this 100%? It's in relation to what you planned in terms of your budget. I hope that relates to that. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. There were so many hands that I it slipped my mind. This 100% of reported cases of fraud and corruption subject to disciplinary processes. What were those disciplinary processes? It's all fine and well to say that we've had them. We know of so many cases that have actually been referred to the public protector or the courts, and they never get prosecuted. What were those disciplinary processes? Thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I would really love, because there's quite a sensible number of questions, I would love for the DG and his team to first respond, and I will come later with your permission. Sure.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Honourable members, we are going to respond to this question, but the observation that we are making, we agree with the committee, but really, Honourable Member, when you go to the PMTE programs, basically the challenges it has to receive the payments from clients. I think in this area we are making very good progress. It's just that we have not yet received the turnaround in terms of the actual money from the client. But our working together with Treasury is assisting in the sense that because the user charges are a dispensation that is regulated, and Treasury plays a very huge role, we need them to assist us to ensure that this matter is resolved, more so that the money resides in the client department. We are actually performing the function without the control of the money which is sitting in the client. We are making progress in that. We have made it clear to the Treasury that they need to assist us so that we move with progress, and Treasury is willing to help. And the issue of interest that has already indicated is assisting in that. It's going also to appear in the audit outcomes of departments who are not paying us. I think our engagement with the Auditor General is also going to assist in this regard. Departments will not want to be negatively audited based on the fact that they are not paying us. With respect to the area of the audit outcome, the Chief Director mentioned that the PMTE is still in progress, and then the
main board DPW already there's an outcome. And then with respect to the moratorium, this one we are reporting on the moratorium of the previous financial year, which was the reason was to ensure that we treat the executive authority properly. The current moratorium was only for a month to ensure that we brief the deputy minister, and the minister is already lifted. We are going to facilitate, but the CDG process is going to report it also. Strategies we are going to put in place to ensure that we close on all the gaps with respect to the freedom of positions. But the underspending with respect to compensation, I think everything that the finance we have said also. In the process of filling positions in the previous financial year, our assessment in the middle, we were projecting an over expenditure in the compensation, and which is not something that is desirable. And then we scaled down on the filling of the positions in the middle, which towards the end, when we were to fill those positions, I think the calculations were not proper there, but the Chief Director of Finance can actually add in terms of that. With respect to the Public Works Academy, the Academy, as already indicated, is still at the conceptual stage. We are bringing the political leaders in the government, the deputy minister and the minister are supposed to agree on this one. It doesn't, however, mean that there will be no training interventions for the PMT and the department, because the programs that are going to feed into the academy are already running, they are already taking place. They were going to be fused into the academy in the process once the academy is established, but the programs for young graduates, training programs that feed into what the academy will entail, are already running in the department to ensure that we close all the gaps. Maybe we should take these others and colleagues will add in terms of all the questions which have been raised, and we come back to us.
Yeah, I think the one area I would like to amplify, especially with regard to the finance, I think an observation has been made about an increasing debtors book. That is, what is owed from clients is increasing, and you see that goes also in terms of the increasing bank overdraft. And you also see that in the reduction in the capital that we recover from clients. So there is a whole area of financial issues that impact on various aspects of the PMT financial statement. I just want to summarize it in the following comments, because this comment carries across. The structure of how we get our money is that the money is given to clients, and then we recover from the clients. Historically, what we did as Public Works, the money came directly to us. So whatever we needed to execute, we talked to the treasury, they gave us the money, we executed. In 2006, that changed, that the money goes to the client, and we then recover from the client. That has brought complications between ourselves and the client, that some of the money that is allocated to clients for accommodation end up being cut or directed somewhere by the clients. That's the one thing. The other, there are disputes between ourselves. For instance, when you look at municipal services, there's dispute about clients saying, you are charging us municipal services for this particular building, but we are not using that building. So therefore, we can't pay this municipal services. So we need to go verify that indeed there are occupy is the right size, the right amount of rates and taxes, then we pay. Now, accumulative of all of those issues end up in money not paid by clients. Then I think the second element, which is illustrated, was the issue about capital, where capital used to reside with public works, but it's with the client. So we go and say, we need to build this for the client. But before we can build it, we must go back to the client to say, we've now got a bid that says this is going to cost you 100 million. Can you confirm for 100 million? Now it can take 3 months for the client to come back and say, yes, for the 100 million, go ahead. Now from the go ahead, we must go contract, so that then delay our time to actually spend the capital. So those are structural issues. They are in national public works, they are in provincial public works. And this is the issue about devolution and accountability that we say, as a sector, we need to crack this and national treasury is aware that this is an issue that is impacting on the whole sector. So I just wanted to take that and I want to look at the finances and the expenditure and the issue of debtors and so forth. That part is quite a significant part that we need to deal with. Now the other category, I think the issue of the asset register was raised. And in fact, I'll defer this tomorrow. We'll be talking about PNT total. I think we can talk about the asset register in depth. But let me just repeat the key messages around the asset register. There are a number of assertions around the asset register that the Auditor General will look at from us to say, does the asset exist? Can you prove that it exists? Can you prove that you own it? Can you measure it in terms of size? Can you give us its value? Those are the main assertions. Now the three first ones where we say existence, ownership, and right and obligation. We can say, by and large, in terms of the Auditor General, we are there. The biggest issue it runs across in terms of audit for PMTE is size and valuation. Size and valuation are related. Because when you look at valuation, you have to go and measure the building and say, this building is so much, and you apply the formula, and this is the value. So the valuation is the biggest issue that we're dealing with, and it comes across in our audit. But progressively, it has been improving. So the size of the valuation mismatch with the AG is decreased. But that's the biggest one. I think that's the biggest partners of asset register. And we'll go into the depth of it tomorrow when we deal with PMTE in its in detail. I think the EPWP matters, I'll leave it to the EPWP colleagues to deal with. The condition, and I think that the condition of buildings, and I think the issue was made with the school. Firstly, let's say schools are not in the national public works, they're in the provincial public works, but we cannot run away from it, from a concurrent mandate, because we have to lead the public sector. Yes, I think in terms of conditions of buildings, it's an issue. And as you've seen, there was a program in the asset register to look at the next level in terms of the asset register, where you go to critical components. What does that mean? Now, you can know that you've got parliament, but in parliament, the critical component lifts, air conditioners, boilers, and so forth. So that's where we go into the next level of counting this critical component and also looking at the condition assessment. That's why we didn't get the funding to go to that level. That's why it's important as not performed. But that's the level that we need to go to be able to assess the condition of our buildings. But it's an issue that over time we'll deal with. So I will stop there and maybe look to my other colleagues to deal with the details, and including, I think, maybe further could deal with the issue of a contractor incubation program, which was indicated, and the EPWP, I think our colleagues are really dealt in terms of the issue that we've raised. Thanks.
Can you take it up,
please?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Stan Lenz. I'm the IDG for the Expanded Public Works Program. A few questions have been posed. I've tried to be accommodate as brief as I can. With regard to skills development in the Expanded Public Works Program, according to our report, what has been reported to us, about more than 84,000 work opportunities, rather training, and training and skills development participants we had in the program. It is perhaps in the broadest. In terms of a target of 1.4 million, it is obviously a small number, but it's based on the funding that we could secure through the Department of Higher Education and Training through the National Skills Fund window. So we have signed an MOA with the DHET to secure this funding. We also had training through accredited training, that is through CITES, and then we have financial training to the participants from the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, FSCA, financial training, the importance that the workers are drawn into the P projects, they should be given the skills to handle their own personal financial matters also. Is the training enough at this stage? We, as the coordinating department, would think that it's not nearly enough and should be upskilled dramatically. And to this end, we are working closely with the lead sector departments such as Department of Environmental Affairs, or the DFS now, and Social Development, and a whole range of other departments to ensure that training will be prioritized through project funding, because each and every project would actually prioritize training. With regard to the EPWP targets that have not been achieved, we have achieved about 69% of the target in the current financial year, the year in discussion, 2018-19. And the question was, what do we actually do, what's being done by the coordinating department? The department of as the coordinating department is driving for complete mainstreaming of the EPWP through all government spending, so that the creation of work opportunities to poor people, or poor and lowly skilled people, will be prioritized. So we work as closely with the municipalities, or to several municipalities. We work to ensure that the EPWP is mainstreamed. We actually sign an agreement with municipalities with regard to the targets to be achieved. So they have a clear protocol and target protocol that's signed with municipalities. And then obviously we look beyond the work opportunities. I've mentioned training. We also work very closely with the Department of Small Business Development to ensure that we can advance SME development through public employment programs. There was a question, Chair, with regard to the designated groups in the EPWP and women, youth, and people with disabilities. And yes, we agree with the comments with regard to it's not accounting of ticking the boxes, regard to human participation. It is important for us to monitor closely at least how many women have participated in the EPRP, and that's why we monitor this closely. And that is why I've mentioned we explore what we call pathways to sustainable livelihoods through SME development. Some we have even though it's on a small scale, but we have very good examples of a cooperative that have been formed, mostly women driven, as well as SMEs. And we believe in phase four, the current year has been, that these initiatives should be taken to scale. Now, once again, because it's important for us not only to draw people into the world of work, but also to ask the question, what lies beyond the work of opportunity? And this the same will go again for the other target regard to people with disabilities. When we work with departments across the scale of government implementing bodies, we push very strongly for dedicated programs for both youth and for people with disabilities, and also in all programs that those targets that we have set for the program, the 60%, 35%, 2%, that it would be adhered to across all projects. So yes, the dedicated programs, would be the first price, but also in other programs, because you would, it's one of those challenging things that for people with disabilities, it's often not possible for them to participate in all projects simply because of the nature of sometimes the infrastructure projects, for instance. But even then, there would be possibilities to explore. The question about the possibility of exploitation of EPWP workers or participants, yes, it's obviously always a possibility. But we want to make it very clear, as co-directing department, that we conduct site visits, public body visits, and we also investigate and follow up on all cases reported to the department where there would be undue interference. And we want to, and we emphasize that the EPWP work, it falls under the Basic Conditions for Employment Act, and it is guided through a special ministerial determination signed by the Minister of Labour, hence the deviation. But it's not, that does not mean that the occupation, the health and safety issues, for instance, can be flaunted, and we have also issued recruitment guidelines according to which EPWP participants should be recruited into the program to ensure fair participation and this very strong community involvement. Chair, I will leave that for now. If there are any other questions, we would be glad to elaborate. Thank you.
Let me just cover one area. I think this one is the issue of gender representativity in appointments. I think is an issue that we are taking up. We will ensure that we address this in our plans when we recruit, because we are aware that we are looking behind in this area. The issue of the policy units lagging behind in terms of capacity, we agree. We know that there is lack of capacity and that they will close that gap. We also accept that to a large extent in all the leasing spaces where we lease out, government receives very less, and then where we are leasing to private sector, we pay a lot, we accept. But with respect to members of parliament, the executive and officials, it
has always been our view, but this is a matter that is under discussion, our view that where the employer provides employment away from work, the employer must actually cover the cost. So I think if I were to be given an opportunity to draft this policy, I would say they should not pay anything if they are away from their work, from their place of residence, because it's double charging. They have to actually cover where they are and where they come from. But it's a matter that we're debating with the National Treasury, this one. Because it's a matter also that was the subject of serious debate in terms of the executive ministers in particular. But I will ask my colleague Shasta to cover the issue of land and also the issue of the asset register from Madam Mathews.
Thank you, DG. Honourable Member, I'm Sasha Sullivan. I have the Real Estate Investment Services Branch. Thank you for the question. The question relates to how many properties were leased. So last year we leased various properties for land reform purposes. We've done, for redistribution, we've done four for agricultural and human settlement purposes. For restitution, we did 37 properties, which we released. We couldn't process 27 properties, and the reason being is that there was outstanding verification documents as well as the signing of the release documents of the term of Section 42D from the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform, but we are working in conjunction with Rural Development to process that this year. We also released land for socio-economic purposes. We did about seven last year. And one in particular where we released land that then unlocked development in strategic areas for economic development. We've done one, for example, with the expansion of the Cape Town Airport. And we also do release land for where there's for servitude or other pipeline development, etc., that will support economic development. And we hope to increase that number this year. Thank you. Sorry, one more thing. In terms of foreign disposal, I beg your pardon, I didn't address that. In terms of foreign disposal, as you're aware, DIRCO, they have custodial delegation for their to be the asset managers of their properties and manage the properties across the life cycle, except for disposal. So in this regard, last year we had no foreign disposals that was done. DIRCO has identified 13 properties that they deemed surplus. And about eight of them is in Namibia. There's one in Germany. But I don't have the stats for the rest of them, but we will obtain them. But the understanding is that we've met with DIRCO, and they're looking at how to perhaps repurpose or reuse these properties and not necessarily dispose them. For example, there's a requirement by the State Security Agency for properties abroad, and they're working in closely with them to see how that can be utilized by that agency, but I'm understanding that there's going to be a detailed presentation in the forthcoming portfolio committee, and we'll get into the details there with my colleagues that are responsible, DIRCO as well. So thank you.
Madam,
good afternoon, Chair, honourable members. I'm Sandy Matthews, and I'm responsible for the municipal asset register. In terms of land parcels, we own approximately 30,000 land parcels and about 81,000 buildings. Chair, we do and we have regularly provided a copy of the movable asset register to the committee, and we can certainly provide a copy of the current asset register in the form of a disc to the committee. I would also like to just say a little on this issue of completeness of the asset register, because this term has is used in various contexts when it applies to the immovable asset register. It's certainly correct that we view the asset register as complete in terms of the management assertion that acting head of PMT mentioned, I think, as one of the assertions earlier on. And in fact, we've never been qualified or tested on the issue of completeness of the asset register by AG since, I think, the financial year 2012-2013. We've not been qualified or given a negative outlook in terms of that particular assertion. I should also add that the asset register is subject to constant change. It's a very fluid register in the sense that the numbers change because we do acquisitions, we do disposals for socio-economic purposes such as agriculture, housing, and the like. So it's not a static document, it's subject to constant change. So, you know, in the context of completeness, you must also take that into account. And more so where there are cases where assets have been fraudulently removed from the asset register, whether it's the DPW asset register or the asset registers of the other national or provincial custodians, we cannot let such a situation be. And we will then subject it to investigation with the intent that those assets must come back to the relevant asset register. And of course, that is going to result in changes in the numbers as well. So I will ask Chair, Honourable Members, if we can just take that into account.
Yeah,
thank you,
Chief.
In fact, Honourable Member and Honourable Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. DG has actually addressed most of the questions in this question. I just want to add one, which I think is critical. That relates to the fraud and corruption case, which I think you asked for that and the details that they gave. Overall, for the financial year, there are about 24 in different categories. The relation of duty, unauthorized absence, and so on and so on. The category that we're interested in, that relates to fraud and corruption, fraud within your supply chain processes and non-combined with your procurement or supply chain provision. They are nine. Now, the goal was to support the effort of the department in trying to fight against fraud and corruption. Was that any case that relates to fraud and corruption, no negotiation, no tools about it, they get subjected directly to civil action. And hence, the title of 100%. So, in that regard, all nine were supposed to be here, five of them were completed, and five were pending the report of the professional by the five were completed. So all together they were nine. That means 20.
It
seems if all nine,
five.
No, I said nine were finalized, report out, outcome given to inquiry, but the four are pending, are waiting the challenge.
Okay, pardon me to this one. Pardon? Yeah, I think I just want to respond. There's a question here, and GM is reminding me. How much do we owe the municipality? We owe them a lot of money. Almost more than 2 billion. Capital points are low. So we are aware about this. We are in an interdepartmental task team, ourselves, treasurer and COFTA, to ensure that we isolate these matters and ensure that we do justice to municipalities, we pay them. So that interdepartmental task team is ensuring that we clean this matter. On the area of the parliamentary villages, I'm aware about this. I also have some cases. I think the team of us based those must just be dealt with, but we'll have a session outside this to ensure that we develop a program to resolve this. It's not something that we are proud of. We want to be out. The issue of the gym, there was a call from honorable members of parliament to have a gym. We have provided the infrastructure because our responsibility is the infrastructure, not to provide what should be inside. What should be inside is the responsibility of parliament.
We have already made aware, I think, our colleagues here at the Secretary of Parliament, so that they must actually ensure that they cover this into their budget. We'll add on the issues of contracts, projects, that is much.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairperson, the committee. In relation to the contractor integration program, I'll start off by saying, in general, we have a transformation program in our project where we ensure that work opportunities get created. We also ensure that there's a 30% allocation for SMME for projects that are greater than 30 million. And also there is an NYS, National Youth Service, for all projects that are greater than 10 million. That is for training for the youth. And also labor empowerment. However, that is not enough for us. That is why the contractor incubation program becomes critical for it to be implemented. We are planning to implement the program targeting grade 3 to 6 CIDD grading, mainly to enhance capacity in the industry. As we speak, honorable members, we've seen negative growth in the last financial year. In this current financial year, we still forecast a negative growth in the construction industry. In 2020, we only start to see a 0% moving in towards a positive growth in the 2021 year. It means that we still have a number of years ahead of us where our contractors are still not performing to the level that they should be performing. But through the CIP program, we'll then be able to incubate them and give them work for them to grow. Our plan is to report regularly on this initiative of ours. And as we speak, we anticipate that the procurement strategy will be approved in this quarter. After that is approved, then the procurement will commence. But if the procurement to put the database of the contractors in place, the contractors will have mentors attached to the mentors for a particular year, and then they are mentored accordingly so they can achieve certain targets. On the mainstream project, there was a question mentioned talking around whether we use other government entities. We do engage other state organs to assist us in the implementation of projects. Currently, we're using implementing agents to assist us with the implementation of some of our projects. There was a question around the oversight and payment, whether do we provide sufficient oversight. We provide oversight in two approaches. Firstly, it is on-site, where after the work is done, the team on-site checks the work and does the necessary paperwork for the certificate to be approved administratively through finance. There is a process that is followed for us to ensure that every certificate that gets signed off, that it has been checked on-site. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Gigi. Chairperson, members of the committee, I just want to clarify a few things. The report is a cumulative report for a year, so for both financial and non-financial performance, it reflects the outcomes at the year ended March 2019. With respect to the audit outcome, DPW has been audited. The outcome is unqualified. PMP is in progress. With respect to performance information, we have one qualified program and an EPWP for the reasons I explained during the presentation. Then, Chairperson, just moving on to the question of the fraud and corruption, because there were five questions there on the fraud and corruption. just to give some kind of perspective there, during the last 5 years, we've established an anti-corruption unit internally. And the anti-corruption unit then works with the SIU and the HOPS and the NPA as well, where required. And the anti-corruption unit by itself, during the last 4 years, has conducted 178 investigations. And of these, they have finalized 141 investigations, 8 are in progress, and 20 serious cases have been referred to the SIU. Now, there's more or less an average of between 2 and 3 serious investigations that are concluded every month. And of these 178 chairperson and members of the committee, but what you had is that 38 have been allegations of fraud and corruption, 33 of tender fraud, 20 of financial misconduct, 2 of lease irregularities, 6 human resource irregularities, and 1 significant project mismanagement. And what has transpired is out of the 173 investigations, 243 disciplinary actions have been recommended to the Labour Relation, the one that Ms. Nchisa spoke about earlier. And of those, 192 have been finalized. And the outcomes have been as follows. We've had 10 dismissals. We have 1 demotion in favor of the father and against the individual concerned. We've had 38 written warnings. We've had 20 final written warnings, 8 sanctions of suspension without pay, 5 verbal warnings, and we've also had 11 retirements or resignations where before the sanction is awarded, the individual resigns. There's a possible dismissal in the pipeline there. And then, of course, our system is very fair. We've even had 96 cases which we've been unable to pursue because our evidence couldn't stand up or the employee won the case because they fight their battles. So this is what has happened. So we've had a lot of success, but we also have a trend where the employees win their cases or we don't have enough evidence. And 51 disciplinary matters are in progress at the moment in time. And then also after the anti-corruption unit, we've made 32 referrals to the SEPs and the HOPS where criminality has been detected, but they have further investigation. And we seek to be kept abreast of developments, but not all the time do we have a response. And we find that the level of performance is very poor. To give an example, we've dismissed an employee for activities which would be characterized as criminal acts of corruption, but the police have yet to take a docket to the NPA. So you have that. So and we also have a 32 million rand, which we refer to our legal services unit for the purpose of recovery. So, Chair, that is only the anti-corruption unit within the department. We also have another engagement with the SIU. The SIU and ourselves have had a number of proclamations over the years, and the SIU has conducted more than 2,000 investigations in the department, and all those investigations, it resulted in a number of disciplinary actions. It's almost 100. And I don't believe the statistics are as impressive with our own internal unit. But what has been impressive is the fact that the SIU has quantified 1.3 billion in potential recoveries for overpayments by the department for mainly leases to the value of between 300 and 400 million. And we're currently recovering these from landlords, direct deductions from the landlord for rental. But there are others that will go to court for recovery. And it's on the record. We've had a number of cases that have come before the court. But in total, there's 1.3 billion rand in potential recoveries. And almost 100 disciplinary actions from the SIU. And the SIU has referred 75 matters to the NPA for criminal prosecution. And they engage in the NPA because of the similar problem we've experienced with the NPA is a low level of prosecution where the evidence is in fact there. And we need to tighten up the law enforcement element and the prosecution element to reflect the success we've had internally. So there, Chair, we've had a good success on our anti-corruption front and our strategy there. Mm-hmm. And we are now pursuing more preventative measures. We will also investigate, but prevention is critical. Just to add to that, Chair, the committee did make mention to us that we should appear before the committee at least twice a year to present the results of our anti-corruption work, and we should engage Secretary here to facilitate that process. I just want to add, Chair, there was a question on the lifestyle audit referred to by the Minister in her budget speech.
Mm-hmm.
Budget transpired, we did a lot of research and we worked with the JCPS cluster to develop a framework for lifestyle audit. And it became a very complicated exercise because a lifestyle audit is an intrusive business in somebody's personal affairs. And if somebody is under investigation, it's well and good to conduct a lifestyle audit. But to conduct it on any person presents challenges. And what has transpired is that they plan to give the function to the SIU of conducting lifestyle audits. And the lifestyle audit will be conducted under the version of a presidential proclamation. So there's a proclamation on its way to the president to give the SIU the authority to conduct lifestyle audit. However, the SIU will also have to have a suspicion on the person in order to conduct a lifestyle audit. So this space is a very contested space because of privacy issues. But the SIU is going to be the organ of state of choice to conduct lifestyle audit. And finally, on this front, Chair Una mentioned that the Minister wrote to the SIU to volunteer herself, the Deputy Minister and the top management in the department as the first to undergo lifestyle audits when the SIU does receive its proclamation. So we were hoping or we were waiting to subject ourselves. And I would imagine that our top management would also volunteer like the Minister or the SIU also. So, Chair, so the last question, I just asked my colleague to answer the one question, the linkage between the finances and the money spent and the performance of the department and the public service budget. I think a few colleagues have raised this. Juan, you can just answer that quickly, please.
Sorry, Chair, just quickly, if I may. Could we have those statistics that you've just read out, please? Somehow you would email it to us, or because I think that's key. All of those statistics in terms of prosecutions, the SIU, the outcomes and so on. Is it possible for us to have that? And secondly, the follow-ups on those who actually resign. What do you do? So if there's an investigation and the person resigns, do you just leave them?
A chairperson through you. I have it on email, yeah, so I'll give it to the secretariat for the committee. And then on the second question regarding the resignation, it is difficult because one doesn't have the capacity to track. And we have a weakness in the public service. We don't have a system to kind of create a register of restricted employees like we have with suppliers. We need that. But in fact, we had one that jumped the fence in the last 3 months. Our own department, somebody's joined, and we're in the process now of dealing with it in a formal manner to deal with how this person was employed, given the fact that the person was previously dismissed. We're seeking to enforce the outcome of that disciplinary hearing that the person then circumvented in the past. Yeah.
Maybe I can assist on that one. If it's an employer-employee relationship, it's led only to labor matters. You cannot pursue a person with a design. It's a legal issue. The person is not only the employee of the department. How that is, the person is not only the employee. But if there's a criminal matter, you can pursue the matter.
Last part also.
talk about reorganization or realignment of organization, the first thing people think about is how I am going to lose my interest and my job, and therefore that becomes resistance. We're trying to work in a manner that that was more simply final page, the last page of the process. You know, I understand that they are found that, according to the briefing I was given, they were quite a huge number, and they are reducing them in chunks. Now, we were then agreeing that the last one had about 40 or so. We have no reason why we can't just remove them, all of them at once. But then that's going to require us to again speak to the honorable members in the committee to ask us. I know the stress that comes with I wouldn't want to move where I am, because it just takes too much on the money. But there is no other way that we can't be watching their name. So at some point we are going to require the members to move. They are the new flags that we